We are in the little book of Jonah this morning. I guess about all the people remember about Jonah. And coming home to do what God told him to do, just like Jonah fleeing from God. A whale swallowed him, big fish swallowed him, and emitted him upon the salt ground. And he went on then to do what God wanted to do. So some think it was an allegory. Of course, all conservative Bible students believe it is historical. So it's either a myth or allegorical or historical. But of course, I believe that it was definitely history. He was a man that lived. It was an event in his life that particular time. Now, not only do I believe it because God preserved it in his book, but Jesus Christ endorsed it. Jesus said in Matthew 12, 39 to about 40, when the Pharisees came to him and said, "Teacher, we will see a sign from thee." Jesus answered and said unto them, "An adulterous and wicked generation seeketh after a sign. There shall no sign be given it, save the sign of Jonah the prophet." For Jonah was in the belly of the whale, the great fish, great sea monster, for 3 days and three nights. So also shall the Son of Man be in the heart of the earth, 3 days and three nights. Now then, if I can believe that Jesus is the Christ, then I can certainly believe that Jonah lived as a prophet. A whale swallowed him, emitted him up, and he went on to do God's will. If I can't believe Jesus at that point, then I can't believe the parallel that he made. He would be in the belly of the whale 3 days and three nights, and then, which would be in the earth, rather, 3 days and three nights, and would come forth. So you see, when you start out to questioning what God said in one point, you wind up, after a while, questioning him in another. But after a while, you brought yourself to the point you don't believe anything God said. That's our problem in our society today. We started out criticizing this, that, and something else. Until now, faith in God and faith in the Word of God, faith in Jesus and his deity, his resurrection, all of that is more or less questioned and rejected by the vast majority of the people of this country. But Jesus put the endorsement on him when he made that statement there. I think that the message from Jonah is twofold. First of all, it teaches that God is the universal God. There's just one God. He's the God of the Ninevites as well as the God of the Jews. And he is because he's the only God there is, the creator of all. And so this is one of the lessons it teaches. And a second lesson is his concern for all peoples. That he's not Jonah and the Jews thought of him more or less as a tribal God. He was the God of the tribe of Israel. But now then God wants to demonstrate to them his interest in all mankind. And so he wants the Ninevites to repent and turn away from their sins, that they might be spared as well as any other people. So I think there are these two great lessons. Another thing is, it's kind of a foretelling in his action of the coming of Christ, who, when he would come to all mankind. He would be put to death, and in the grave he'd come forth, proving that he was the Christ, the Son of God. Just as Jonah, I no doubt that this word had reached the Ninevites long before Jonah got there. Because when he just went through the city preaching one day there, while they repented and put on sackcloth there, they were ready to turn away from their sins and recognize God. Right? So there's a parallel. So you have the lesson of Christ in this. Then you have another lesson, I think. There are a number of lessons that we get from this. One of them is the difference between a miracle and an act of God. I want to point that out. A lot of people can't distinguish between a miracle and an act of God. A storm is an act of God. The releasing of a man from a whale's belly after 3 days is a miracle. Right? So there's a difference here between acts of God and miracles. Still is. God is still acting through the forces at his control, but he is not performing miracles today. So you've got that difference. Now a lot of people mistake an act of God for a miracle. To all the difference in the world in them. That's one of the differences, one of the lessons I think we get from it. Another is that men cannot run from God and get away with it. And Jonah said, I'm going to run the other way. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to run away from God. You can't do that. One man has said, any time a man tries to run from God, he's going to raise a storm. storm is going to come, and I think that's a pretty good way to say it. Here, this storm came up, and that's generally come when you run from God. You have this thought in here. First, he's running from God. Then, in the belly of the whale, he ran to God, called upon him there. Then afterward, God told him to go into Nineveh, and he ran with God. And then when he got there, and God brought up that worm that killed the gourd vine, that brought the sun down upon his head, well, he kind of ran against God there. So he runs away from him, he runs to him, he runs with him, and he runs against him there in that particular thing. I think that's a pretty good point. That's made in this book, a pretty good lesson here. I think another lesson we're going to get out of it, maybe it would be better if I'd have gone through the book and then brought out these things, but we'll bring them out now and maybe survey them then also. Another is that God can take these things that apparently are against an individual and make them work for his good. For Jonah, who was running from God, finally was brought back to him. When he called upon him, God, in the belly of the whale there, for God to save him, he says, salvation is of Jehovah. So he's a different man now. He learned some things he can't do, the things that he must do. That's what the lesson I think we'll get out of it. Another thing is opportunity presents a challenge. Now, we are told by historians that Assyria was in a very serious depression or state at that time. From about 800 or a little before 800, maybe 840, to about 745, Assyria, when Tiglath-Pileser became the king of Nineveh, but at any rate, during that period of 75 or 100 years there, the Assyrians were fighting a war with a group to the north there, of them up around the Black Sea, and they were not doing so well at it. Another thing, there was internal strife. There were revolutions within the Assyrian power. So it was that time when Assyria was at a very low state that God sent his servant over there to try to turn them back to him. So lots of times when a person is in an adverse situation, he's then in a better position to listen to God and to give heed to him than any other time. And I think Russia right now, that's why the Russians are looking for Bibles and ready to listen to our brethren. They're going over to preach to them and teach to them. And so also those other, Czechoslovakia, one of my young friends from over at Pinker over there right now trying to teach the Bible. He's only teaching English. We told him he'd teach English only if he could teach English from the Bible. Use the Bible as a textbook. Well, that's, you see, they agreed to that. So you can see how that's giving him an opening to talk to those people there about God. And I had a report from him the other day, a letter from him, told me that they were listening, they were anxious to hear. So why? Because they're in a depressed state. Now, in our state, our affluent state, we've turned away from God. Now then, if God strikes us down to the ground and we lose everything we've got, and there's internal strife and all that, maybe that may turn us back to God. So those are opportunities that come there. Well, all right, and the last thing that we're going to learn in this little book, fine little book, is God's infinite interest in and concern for people. Whereas over against that, you see Jonah as a narrow-minded fellow that is concerned only for his people. You see another lesson here. Like God sees these people, we see these people in all this distress there, and we're not interested in them. But when something like a little gourd vine that we were taking our shade of, we're getting in the shade of, when we lose that, we're deeply concerned. That's one lesson I've learned from Jonah. I tried to learn the lesson. Is not, I read about something over yonder and all their calamities and all that. Well, that's a long ways from me. Doesn't concern me. Sure, let a little leak get in the house there, something else there. Well, man, that's terrible. We're going to lose, our furniture might get soiled there or something. So, a whole lot of difference in God's view of the thing and ours. God sees it from the value of the human life and all his creation. We see things from our own narrow point of view there. So that's a good lesson I want to bring out. So let's start reading the little book now. All right, we turn to the little book. And now the word of Jehovah came unto Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, Arise. go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness is come up before me. Right, so that doesn't make it here whether it's Assyria, or whether it's Arabia, or whether it's one of those folks who have been in battles over there, those Muslims. All their wickedness comes up before Jehovah. They're all answerable to him, though they don't know it. Our rulers over here, which are leaving God out of their thinking. Why, you probably read about it. One of the lawyers in a court case merely mentioned the Bible, and the judge threw the case out because he brought the Bible into it. A nation can't last, it does that. You know, folks, I'm just telling you, as I have been for 10 years now, we're headed for a judgment that's going to curl the hair of every one of us. Of course, it's on its way. We've rejected God. When you do that, you got a storm coming. Try to run from him, put him out. A storm's going to be bound to arise. All right, it come before me. Now, this Nineveh, great city here, and cry against it. Go cry. Tell them the problem. But Jonah rose up to flee unto Tarshish from the presence of Jehovah. Now, Tarshish was a trade city in southwest Spain, was now Spain, about around Gibraltar, a little over there. It was a trading city of the Phoenicians. Now, the Phoenicians were those people on the northwest coast there Palestine there. We talked about Tyre and Sidon. Well, they traded all over the world. Great sea traders. Well, Phoenician city in Tarshish. That's as far as he could go. That's about the end of the world. They knew. So he's going to flee to Tarshish. And he went down to Joppa. That's the only seaport that the Jews had at that time. Caesarea. They had an artificial one at Caesarea. And found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare thereof and went down into it to go with them unto Tarshish from the presence of Jehovah, and flee to the uttermost parts of the earth. Even there thy right hand shall hold me. Thy left hand shall hold me, thy right hand shall lead me around, the other shall hold me up. So I can't flee from God. Wherever I may go, God's going to be there, and she's older than that, the world unseen. But Jehovah sent out a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship was like to be broken. Now, those great winds came up periodically. So this was not a miracle. This is an act of God in the use of his natural forces and natural laws to accomplish a thing. You remember when Elijah told his servant to go and look toward the west, toward the sea, in the midst of that night started raining, either one of those would have been a miracle. It's not the way it happened, though. James tells us about it, you remember? All right. So the ship was like to be broken. Then the mariners were afraid and cried every man unto his God, and they cast forth the wares that were in the ship into the sea to lighten it unto them. But Jonah had gone down into the innermost parts of the ship, and he lay and was fast asleep. Now, you wonder how a man could be fast asleep under a situation like that. But stop and think about it. When we have gone, one of us has gone through an experience of trying to make up our mind. And so finally, I've wrestled with this thing. Shall I go to Nineveh, or shall I flee? And you decide, you can make up your mind, I'm going to flee. Then when you've made up your mind, and you settle down, right, you're ready now, you go to sleep. I think that's what happened to Jonah. And so he went to sleep, that fast asleep. So the shipmaster came to him and said unto him, what meanest thou, O sleeper? Arise, call upon thy God, if so be that God will think upon us, that we perish not. You just think about it. Here's a heathen shipmaster that is rebuking one of God's prophets. Here's a prophet of God, fleeing from God, and here now he tells man so, that that was his God, and if so be that your God will answer you. So here's a man now that are being rebuked by a heathen individual. That's a shame. And they said, every one to his fellow, come, let us cast lots, that we may know for whose cause this evil is upon us. So they cast lots, and the lots fell upon Jonah. Remember back in the Proverbs, one of the Proverbs says, the lot is cast into the lap. The whole proceeding said they unto him, Tell us, we pray then. Now, know these questions. Here's just a machine gun. We had told him that he was fleeing from Jehovah. Now when he tells them how great this Jehovah is, he made the sea and the dry land. Why, now this is something to be afraid of. So it did. It threw the fear of judgment into them. All right. Now comes the point in which he cast into the sea. Then said they unto him, what shall we do unto thee, that the sea may be calm unto us? For the sea grew more and more tempestuous. Now, there's one thing we'll have to admire about this man. I admire him because he was really a strong patriot. He loved his country. He feared those Assyrians, wanted those Ninevites destroyed. And he was fleeing from God rather than go and preach that message. But now that I see another point which I respect, he was a fearless man. Told them the truth. He was not a coward. He wasn't afraid to die. We didn't die for those people. And he said unto them, take me up and cast me forth into the sea. So shall the sea be calm unto you, for I know that for my sake this great tempest is upon you. So that was honesty. Run from God. This is for you. Cast me into the sea. Better that I should perish than that all of you should. Well, you see a parallel in Jesus in that. Jesus came to die, not for himself, but for those individuals who were lost in the great storm and shipwreck of life. So Jesus died for them. He was willing to. Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get them back to the land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. All right? So they were trying to row back. They wanted to spare. Now, that's the difference there between those heathen and the Jewish people. They said, crucify. These heathen fellows, they tried to save Jonah. They tried to get back to land. They didn't want to destroy him. A man honest like that and upright, and this was his God. Well, we want to destroy him. Wherefore they cried unto Jehovah and said, we beseech thee, O Jehovah, we beseech thee, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not upon us innocent blood. For thou, O Jehovah, hast done as it pleased thee. So they recognize now that when they throw him in the sea there, and he's drowned, why then they don't want to be held responsible for his murder. So they cried to Jehovah, and lay not this charge upon them. So they took up Jonah and cast him forth into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. And how long? I don't know. Then the men feared Jehovah exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice unto Jehovah and made vows. Doing a little more wondering, don't you imagine that wherever these sailors went, they told this story about Jonah and this great storm there and all of that. Now, of course, they don't know the whale swallowed him. I don't suppose that they could have. They could have seen him swallowed as he went down. They might have seen that. But no idea he'd ever live beyond that storm. But at any rate, I think when we get to this idea of Jonah's message in Nineveh, in our next session, I think that one reason why those people were so willing to listen to Jonah, and no doubt the story of his miraculously spared had preceded him, had gone before him. So they were ready to listen to him. I don't know how much time elapsed in that. But these are things I think you can consider and think about when you raise these questions. But I noticed he was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Now, he's really not called a whale here or in the original language in Matthew. He's called a fish here, a great fish. He's called a sea monster over there. But I think it was certainly a whale. That'd be the main one. Some sharks could do that. Could have swallowed him. But it was either a whale or one of the great sharks, something of that nature. All right, so, and he was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Now let's look at the preparation of this fish. God create this great fish here at that moment? No, not necessarily. Plenty of fish out there in the Mediterranean. Whale, big shark, large enough to swallow an individual. They found one case where when they swallowed a horse when they opened it up there. And so that's not a miracle. The miracle is not in the fact that the fish was there. That was an act of God. Not the fish was big enough to swallow Jonah. The miracle is in what? The fact that he remained in the belly of that fish 3 days and three nights, came out and lived. That's the miracle. And it couldn't have been done other than a miracle. So that really is the first miracle we have in the book. Now then, in the belly of this great fish, now Jonah cries out to God. Now he runs to God, running from God. Chapter 1. He's running to God, and there's chapter 2 here. Then Jonah prayed unto Jehovah his God out of the fish's belly. And he said, I called. This is past tense. But it seems to me that Jonah is writing, because he's writing afterwards. So now he's writing what he did while he was in the fish's belly there. Said, I called by reason of mine affliction unto Jehovah, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol cried I, and thou heardest me. Now notice here, I cried and God answered. I cried, God heard. Now, out of the belly of Sheol, the word Sheol means the unseen. Sometimes it's translated grave. Sometimes it's translated the nether world, the world of spirits. But it simply means the unseen. Now in the New Testament, the word Hades, which is a parallel Greek word to the Sheol of the Hebrew, it simply means the unseen. When you talk about Hades, you're not talking about a place of torment or punishment. One might be tormented there, but you're talking about an unseen realm. Jesus went into Hades, and God spared him, raised him up out of Hades there. All right, so remember those two words there. And on out of the belly of Sheol cry, and thou heardest me. And thou, notice he recognizes what God has done, and thou didst cast me into the depth, in the heart of the seas, and the flood was round about me. All thy waves, thy billows, passed over me. Now, I'm sure it seemed that way to him, that all the waves of the sea passed over while he was in that state and that condition. But I want you to try to put yourself in that. So I think, I can't ever stop and read this carefully. But I kind of get a shivery feeling of thinking of being in a position where I couldn't move my hands, I couldn't breathe, and yet I kept on living. And I'm sure all that happened to Jonah. See, he couldn't move in that, of course, the tightness of it. Probably his hands were like this when he went down. He might have had them up yonder. But anyway, however that fish swam, since he realized now that God was going to spare him. Well, let's move from Jonah to some fellow in this Sheol or Hades, the unseen world. Here he's there. What can he do about it? Not a thing. He can't help us. All of his deeds come before his mind. Here he was dark, he would see, he was looking for light out of darkness. And so I think it's a pretty good illustration of what it's going to mean to an individual to be lost, who runs away from God, and now then who comes face to face with God in this incident here. So here he is, can't move those weeds, he can't get away from that stinking stuff that's surrounded by them, he's encased in there, and all that. And so here I am. There's but one place on earth you can turn when you get in a condition like that. It'll be too late when this life is over. But only one place I can turn when I'm in a condition like that today, that's to God. That's all. We get in that position sometimes. We feel that we're our arms are tied, hands are tied. We feel that we can't get out of our situation. We're in a situation, what are we going to do here? Do what Jonah did. Cry out to God. Turn to God. Bring the thing to God. He alone is the one who can help us. And this is one of the great lessons here. When I reach my extremity, that becomes God's opportunity. Someone has said man's extremity is God's opportunity. I think that's correct. So when I reach the point, I realize now of myself, I can do nothing. I'm totally dependent upon God. So if I get out of it, it'll be because of God. If God doesn't allow it, and I've repented and turned to him, well, I'll be in a better state anyway when that's over. So the point is that I'm making here. There's one place to turn when you get in that situation. Turn to God. Well, let's notice a little further. Now notice he says here, I went down to the bottoms of the mountains. The earth with its bars closed upon me forever. And it age lasted. The word forever means age lasting. So it wasn't eternal as we think of it, without time. It's time in time, all right. What it means is the fullness and completeness of it forever. And so yet hast thou brought up my life from the pit, O Jehovah my God. Now the pit there was corruption here, brought him up from corruption. Now, he's writing this, you see, later on, expressing his experience in this fish, his cry to God and what God did. When my soul fainted within me, I remembered Jehovah, and my prayer came in unto thee, into thy holy temple. A wonderful thought. Notice. And when he said, when my soul fainted within me, when I couldn't do any more, I'd gone the limit now. And I remembered Jehovah. My prayer, I cried out unto him in prayer. My prayer came unto him, and God answered it, unto the holy temple. They that regard lying vanities forsake their own mercy. And so when I listened to my own conscience there, my own will then fled from God, never pays. That never pays. They forsake their own mercy. But I will sacrifice unto thee with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay that which I have vowed. Now, on unto the Most High, call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver thee, and thou shalt glorify me. Do what? Call upon me in the day of trouble. I will hear thee. I will glorify thee. That is a wonderful promise of God. It's a wonderful illustration of it. And this man, this fellow Jonah. Now let me look at this last verse here. Salvation is of Jehovah. Now, that's the only place we can find it. To recognize that. But sometimes we have to reach the extremities of life. We have to hit the bottom. We've got to be in the belly of a whale clear down here in the valleys of the sea here, down here. There's no other way but up. Can't go any other way. Hit the bottom. Then we call upon God. We don't wait that long. Sometimes we find ourselves in that situation. When we find ourselves there, call upon Jehovah. God said, you call upon me. I will answer. That's to the fellow that turns to him. Turn to him with all of his heart. And Jehovah spake unto the fish, and it vomited out Jonah from the dry land. All right, when God spake to the fish, how did he speak? I don't know. I have no idea. It's his property. See, he's got control of it. Here's a thing I thought about. What do you imagine the first thing that Jonah did when he got out? Probably he fell on his knees and thanked God. And the second thing then, he jumped back into the ocean and wash off. Take a good bath in the ocean, wash up real good there. Get that whale stuff off of him there. I imagine that's the second thing he did. I know, I'm sure that's the second thing I'd have done, if not the first, the Thanksgiving last. But anyhow, now then he's back. Now, an interesting thing about the next two chapters, I'm not starting because I won't be able to finish them. We might have some questions on this in a moment. I'll go back and look at some of these things we said we do here. But at any rate, as we look at this now, in the next chapter, God doesn't rebuke him. God doesn't mention what he's done, as though it had never happened. God said, Jonah, go unto Nineveh and do the preaching which I bid thee. Jonah didn't argue with him that time. He had enough. That whale experience. Well, could you call that a whale of an experience? I guess so. At any rate, that whale experience told him a lesson. I think, class, that's one of the things, our adversities in life. And those things teach us. They teach us not to depend on self, but to depend on God. They teach us that when these trials come, these tragedies of life come, only one way to turn, that's to God. Turn to him. When we're trying to solve our own problem without God, we're in a bad fix. Now, that's our problem in America today. We're trying to solve our problems here on the basis of human wisdom and human philosophy. And look at the mess our nation's in. It's economic mess, the social mess, the moral mess, the religious mess, the whole condition that we're in today. Headed for destruction, going over a cliff, just as sure as there's a Niagara Falls over which a fellow can go, we're headed for that Niagara Falls. Unless somewhere we grab hold of God out here on the bank and pull ourselves ashore, let him pull us ashore rather, and we turn to him. And I don't see any sign of that. I don't see any sign of it. So future elections coming up. All I'm praying for is God give us a man that'll have enough judgment and wisdom and faith in him to try to turn the thing around morally first and then the other way. And I don't see anybody on the horizon to do that. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't see a man on the horizon that is able to do it. No man is able. nor have the faith to turn to God and try to get God to do it. All depending on their own human wisdom and human power. Well, that's going to fail, whether it's the individual, whether it's a family, or whether it's the whole nation, or whether it's the church, whatever it is. Whenever man depends on himself and his wisdom and his own feelings in the matter, what I want to see Nineveh destroyed. God says, no, I've got 120,000 there that don't know the right hand from the left hand. Well, those are children and young people. I don't know what he meant by that. I think I'll talk about them and come to it. But at any rate, God was looking at these. So we've got to be a turning to God, no question about it. Brother Harry Mann came down to me during the week. He wanted me to write a little letter to the editors of his paper, The Star, I don't take it, on the capital punishment. So much said about it in defense of, against capital punishment and defense of the humanistic philosophy and concept. Well, in writing that, I concluded the little letter. I can't write about so much that. I don't know whether I don't know it will be published. I showed it from the beginning, God's capital punishment was God's penalty for murder, and also in Numbers and in the New Testament. I concluded with this thought, that unless this nation comes to its senses and recognizing God as being in control and turns, we're doomed for trouble. We're doomed for destruction. Ecclesiastes, he said, and I close this passage. He said, because judgment against an evildoer is not executed speedily. Therefore, it is in the hearts of the sons of men to do evil continually. It's true. Ecclesiastes 8:11. And because we are not executing the judgments of sin and murder and all of that speedily, men are going to continue to be wicked, grow worse and worse, and God will have to destroy it. Only one way to turn right now, and that's to God. Do you see any sign of it anywhere? I don't. I don't see any sign of it anywhere. Now, there may be individuals who are looking at it like I am, but paper's not going to mention those. TV's not going to mention those. What it's going to show is the other side of this whole thing here, and let us believe that we can pull ourselves out by our own bootstraps. I have a pair of boots where once in a while. I think about that sometimes. I reach down and try to lift myself up. You know, I've never lifted myself a quarter of an inch yet by my own bootstraps. Have you? We never have. Nor has this nation. Nor will it ever. So I think Jonah. I think the little book of Jonah has a very excellent message for the people of the United States today. Well, it's to Jonah and Nineveh back yonder. So next time we'll talk about how they turned. So here's a whole nation. Another lesson I think this teaches is that when a nation has committed its national crimes, you're going to have to repent as a nation. We're going to have a national repentance. We're going to change it. Well, we'll talk about that next time. So we'll leave the lesson there. We'll take the next two chapters next time. Finally, the book. I hope you enjoy these minor prophets like I've always enjoyed them. They've been I taught them down in Florida for about 20, 22 years. Always my favorite, one of my favorite courses, minor prophets. Class is excused.